This episode of the Policy Viz podcast is brought to you by JUMP Statistical Discovery Software from SAS. JUMP, spelled J-M-P, is an easy-to-use tool that connects powerful analytics with interactive graphics. The drag-and-drop interface of JUMP enables quick exploration of data to identify patterns, interactions, and outliers. JUMP has a scripting language for reproducibility and interfacing with R. Click on this episode's sponsored link to receive a free info kit that includes an interview with DataViz experts Kaiser Fung and Alberto Cairo. In the interview, they discuss information gathering, analysis, and communicating results.
Welcome back to the Policy Viz podcast. I'm your host, John Schwabisch. On this week's episode, we're going to go a little over the Atlantic. I'm happy to have on the show Martin Lambrex from Belgium. Martin, I was close, I think, on pronouncing your last name, but maybe not quite there.
Yeah, actually very close.
Martin, thanks for coming on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad you could come on the show and chat with me. We have a lot of great projects of yours that I want to talk about. But first off is congratulations on new website, new journey, I guess, into the freelancing sphere, data journalist, data designer, and visualization consultant. I think you have your work cut out for you. Before we get into maybe some of your projects, do you want to talk a little bit about your background and what your goals are, what your dreams are for the new venture you're undertaking?
Okay. So I graduated some 13 years ago as a bioengineer, and I also have worked some years as a bioengineer and an agricultural economist. But then I stumbled more or less into journalism, and for the past 2 years I was working at Mediafin. It's a Belgian company and publisher of two newspapers, the Tijd in Dutch and L'Echo in French. And I worked there as a data journalist and a visual journalist, making charts and maps, interactive and static. And a few weeks ago, I switched to freelancer. So I'm now for hire. I teach, I give workshops in data visualization and data journalism. And I also design visualizations. So, yeah.
So the whole range of things that people need. So if you are in Belgium or Europe or anywhere in the world and you need someone to help you with your data visualization needs, Martin is a great guy to go to. And so we're going to talk about some of his projects so you can get a flavor of the type of things that he works on. I want to start with one of the really neat projects you did. And I think you launched this at Malofier conference last March. Your Rock and Poll project is sort of an interactive data story on explaining uncertainty in poll results. Do you want to talk a little bit about, you know, how you got into that and why that was interesting to you, then a bit about how you built it and what you're trying to do with it?
Yeah. So I was a bit annoyed about how polling results were reported here in Belgium, but I guess the situation is similar in other countries. So reporting focused on small differences in poll results, and I want to show the public, but also my colleague journalists, that focusing on small differences is not a great idea, because in polling results you have uncertainty, and small differences can be the result of randomness. And I wanted to explain it visually and without using any statistical formulas, because I knew that a lot of people would just switch off with the first formula. And so I built it interactively, and I also made it a bit like a story. So I explain these things step by step, and people can interact, they can generate their own polls, and they can see how polling more people influences the polling results. And in the end, they can generate 8 polls at the same time, and then they can see the differences between those polling results, and they can see that randomness actually can play a big part in polling results. So it was my attempt to explain one aspect of polling, and the uncertainty that goes with that, but yeah, visually and interactively, so without using any statistical formulas.
Do you think that people don't understand uncertainty because we don't do a good job of explaining what uncertainty means, that we use terms of margins of error and people just don't understand it, or we present sort of, you know, this 52%, 52% of people support this candidate, and we sort of provide it as this, you know, solid, hard, specific number, and maybe we should be a little bit softer about how it's presented. Where do you see the pain points, I guess, of presenting uncertainty to news readers or media readers or people who may not just be familiar with the statistics and the underlying uncertainty?
Yeah, I think uncertainty is something really hard to understand, and even I struggle with it sometimes. The thing we need to do is make it visual. There are some techniques to show uncertainty. You can, first of all, visualize the interval, the confidence interval. You can play with animation. So there are a lot of techniques, and there's also research about how best to represent uncertainty visually. So first step we need to take, I think, as visualizers is when there is uncertainty, also show it in our graphics. Because then people, but also the journalists who are reporting on the story, they will notice that there's something there. And when they see overlapping intervals, they might be a bit more hesitant in drawing big conclusions from the data. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to just show uncertainty when there is uncertainty visually. And then people will start to be more susceptible to uncertainty and maybe even understand it better.
Yeah. I mean, there are lots of reasons, I think, why uncertainty is not well understood. And from the sort of media perspective, it's a lot easier to give the point estimate of something. This is 46%, as opposed to saying, well, it's 46%, but plus or minus X and Y. How do people get around, or content producers really get around that, where you want to give something quick and short and get to the point, but also you need to convey this uncertainty? You've mentioned making it visual, but I can imagine a lot of times where, you know, you're writing a report or a journal article or a news article. I mean, how do we, as people who are working with data and visualizing data, how do we try to educate people, I think, a little bit more on what uncertainty means, what probability means, and those sorts of things?
Well, I think we just have to have the journalistic reflex that if there's something we don't understand, we need to ask it to someone who does understand. So when a reporter wants to write a story about polling results, for example, he wants to be sure that there's a story there. He just needs to talk to the people who conducted the poll or other people who are more statistically savvy. So they just need to ask for advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, the people conducting the polls also have a big role to play in the whole system of polling, in my view, because often they don't do a very good job on reporting the results to the reporters. The confidence intervals and margin of errors that are put in the small print at the end of the documents, for example. Yeah, for journalists to understand what is in the results is actually really hard, because the explanation uses the jargon, the statistical jargon. So people conducting the polls also have a responsibility in explaining what all the results mean.
Yeah, that's a great point. The Rock and Poll project you did was an interactive visualization tool, but I know you also have some strong feelings, maybe we should say, about the relationship between interactive visualizations and static graphics. You were at Malofier last year. Archie Say gave a great talk on why maybe the New York Times is sort of moving a little bit away from interactivity. Can you talk a little bit about your feelings on maybe moving away from interactivity towards static graphs?
Yeah, I think Archie did a good job there in just showing that also the big newsrooms who used to do these very complex interactives, and they're stepping away from that. And this was actually good news for smaller newsrooms, because producing static graphics is a lot easier and needs less time and less people to do it. Yeah, it was actually good news. But stepping away completely from interactivity, I think, isn't the solution, because for some data sets, it's actually useful to have some interactivity. For example, if you want readers to discover the stories in the data that are most relevant to them, you have to give them some search forms, for example, or some other controls to find their own stories. So I think, we can't step away completely from interactivity, because interactivity also can be really powerful. Without interactivity, my rock and poll wouldn't be so comprehensible and would be right. More boring, I think. We like seeing moving things on the screen, so I think, we should keep doing interactives, but as Archie said, it's really hard to make it work on all screens. Well, I see some websites who are doing really great interactives at the moment, but they're not in journalism. They're more like RT projects or experiments, and they work really well on desktop. And when you open them on a small screen, they just say, I'm sorry, for this you need a bigger screen.
Yeah.
And I think there's some value in that, because, if you want great visual and interactive things, you need pixels. It's a bit a pity that news is consumed so much on smaller screens. When I started working in journalism, it was all desktop. And obviously, we have to face this reality, but we can't throw away the interactivity completely just because people are reading news on smaller screens. There's a lot of value of putting more complex and visual interactive things on bigger screens. Mm-hmm. So, you have to balance the two, I think.
Yeah. What I find interesting about interactivity is that in some ways it's more complex to create, because you need to know how to use those tools or those programming languages to create the interactivity, where, everyone can make a chart in Excel and that's fine. Things like Tableau and, high charts and things, maybe they're not that complicated, but it requires some other level of skill or knowledge. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, in some ways it's lazier. I feel like a lot of the interactive pieces are lazier because the creator just says, well, here's an interactive piece. You can just go dive into it and go figure it out on your own. Whereas in the static pieces, we have to think about the annotation and the notation and the text to help the user understand. Do you sort of see that conflict? Do you think that people just make things interactive because they have the tool in front of them and they can, and it's just an easy way to do it?
Well, I don't think it's lazy, and I don't really see a conflict. If you make things static, then you have to think really well about the message you want to convey, and that's a great thing because it lets you focus. But for me, the greatest pieces are the ones where you guide your reader through a data set, maybe in a sequence of static charts or maps. And then in the end, you give the control to your reader and you say, well, here's all the data. Go look for yourself. Mm. Try to find your own stories or the stories most relevant to you. And I think those are, the most powerful, because you explain first what is in there and what are, according to you, are the stories in there. And then you just give away all the data and you give the reader some controls to find their own story. And I think those are the pieces I enjoy the most.
Mm. When you start a new project or when you're given data, do you immediately start down in your mind? Do you start down a static path, or do you start down an interactive path when you're thinking about sort of the final project?
I think that develops along the way, but in most cases you have an idea of what you want to achieve. Mm. I think the decision to build an interactive alongside some static visuals or just interactive on itself, I think this decision is made pretty early in the whole process, because you need different things that the data needs to be structured in different ways. For example, if you're building static things, you can mostly calculate some aggregates, for example, and build some charts. If you want to go interactive, then you start most of the times with the raw data, the non-aggregated data, because you want to show all you have. So I think this decision is made pretty early in the whole process.
Can you talk a little bit about your development and creation process and the sort of suite of tools that you use?
Well, what I do when workload permits it, and those are mostly during summer and winters during holidays, is learning new tools or extend my knowledge of tools I already use. And last summer, I took the occasion to learn some R and also ggplot2, the R package for visualization. And I noticed that when you know those tools, you know how to work with them, you don't need a lot of Excel anymore, because it has some advantages. Mm-hmm. Using R, for example, everything you do is recorded. You build scripts, and when new data comes in, you can just run the script against it, and then you have in the end a new visualization with the fresh data. In Excel, a lot of the times you just have to start from zero and repeat all the steps you did before. So I use R to make sketches. What I have done also is produce PDFs within R, which I send to the graphics people, the people who make graphics for the newspaper. So I make like the structure of a visualization, and they finish it off for the newspaper. And then for interactives, I use D3, mm-hmm. like most of the online interactive visualizations. I can really recommend people to learn some R, because it's really powerful. And if you invest some time in it, you'll notice that it will save you a lot of time later on. And it can seem like a big mountain, but I can guarantee it really pays off.
Yeah. You mentioned when you were at the newspaper working with the design staff. How do you get together? How do you work in teams? Or maybe the better question is, what's your view of sort of the skill sets that are needed in a team to sort of have this entire workflow of writing and data visualization and maybe, you know, data analysis, statistics and design? Sort of, if you could build your perfect team, do you have sort of this core skill sets in mind already?
Well, I think you have to have someone who is comfortable working with data. And then you also need someone who knows how, what visualization fits to what data, for example. And then you need someone who can finish the design. So someone who knows design, who knows typography. If you're in a print environment, you need to have someone who understands the logic of print, because it's really different from online. Yeah, and then obviously a reporter. And I think it's also really important for reporters to know a bit about visualization, to know what chart types are out there and what chart types could fit their story, and also how to mix charts with text. Because a lot of the times a chart is just something to illustrate a written text. And I think those are missed opportunities. You really need text and visuals to work together.
Mm-hmm. Is there a skill that you think is missing from let's start with the data visualization, people who sort of, you know, regularly make visualizations and do data visualization. Is there a skill set that they're really missing? Like if someone asked me, you know, what skill set are researchers missing from communicating their work? You know, one of the first things I would say would be, you know, they're not thinking visually. And so they're not thinking about how to communicate to a sort of broader audience. Is there a skill set that you think the data visuals, you know, people who are you know, primarily making visualizations, is there a skill set that they are, for lack of a better term, maybe they're lacking?
Really interesting that you asked that, because just today I was looking at a cartogram of the Netherlands, which is not my own country, and I was noticing that it was very hard to interpret, because I wasn't familiar enough with the normal shape of the country of the Netherlands, so I couldn't really estimate how do you say, the deviations that were shown in the cartogram. So in the cartogram, the polygons of the provinces in this case are distorted according to some data value. But I'm not from the Netherlands, so I couldn't really understand the map. And what we often forget is that people who are not looking at graphics day in, day out, like me or like other people who make those graphics, that it's often not so easy for lay people to get into graphics they're not familiar with.
Yeah.
So we really need to pay attention to that. We have to add enough annotation so people can understand everything in the graph really well, and the bar to get into it is lowered. But on the other hand, I also think that we need to experiment, and especially in media, I think we have a role to play in educating our readers on less common graphics, because sometimes a story can benefit from a graphic that's not like your normal bar chart or line chart. It's more like an exotic graphic. And I think we just have to, in those cases, go for it and publish those weird graphics, because they can illustrate the story sometimes much better than the day-to-day bar charts and line charts. We need to be conscious that not everybody is looking at charts and maps all day long.
That is certainly true. Do you have a particularly favorite non-standard, shall we say, chart type these days?
It still surprises me how few slow graphs I see in media, especially because they're so efficient and also very elegant. And in a print environment, in a newspaper, they fit really well because they can fit into one column of text, for example, or maybe two. And a lot of times when reporters want to show the differences between two time periods, they use bar charts, a slope chart is just so simple and beautiful and effective, and we're still not using it, so that keeps surprising me.
I think that's right, and I think it's one of those, like you said, one of those graph types that's sort of new to most people, and requires some explanation of not only the content but also how to read the chart, so it sort of adds that layer of complexity, I guess, to a lot of readers.
But in essence, it's just a line chart. But
no, that's right. That's right.
With two points in time.
Absolutely. Martin, this has been really interesting. I'm really excited about the work you've been doing in 2016, and certainly excited to see what comes out of your new efforts here in 2017. So thanks for coming on the show, and good luck this year.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for inviting me. It was a real honor.
It was great. And thanks to everyone for tuning in to this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed it, and please check out Martin's work on his website and the various projects that I will link to on the show page. So please also let me know what you think of the show, guests that you'd like to hear from, comments, suggestions, either on the website at policyviz.com or on Twitter. So until next time, this has been the Policy Viz Podcast. Thanks so much for listening.
This episode of the Policy Viz Podcast is brought to you by JUMP Statistical Discovery Software from SAS. JUMP, spelled JMP, is an easy-to-use tool that connects powerful analytics with interactive graphics. The drag-and-drop interface of JUMP enables quick exploration of data to identify patterns, interactions, and outliers. Jump has a scripting language for reproducibility and interfacing with R. Click on this episode's sponsored link to receive a free info kit that includes an interview with DataViz experts Kaiser Fung and Alberto Cairo. In the interview, they discuss information gathering, analysis, and communicating results.